Hi, Bobby Halton here for our sponsor, Unimac. Hey, Unimac wants to remind you to take care of your crew with the most complete PPE cleaning solution in the industry. With washer extractors built for maximum performance tailored to NFPA 1851 standards, simple record-keeping capabilities, and free training for your entire firehouse, it's no wonder that Unimac is called on by fire crews across the nation. Check out Unimac at unimac.com/firecrew.
About safety, survival, and other things. Welcome to the Backstep.
Ronnie, you there?
I am here. You there?
I'm here. Wow.
Okay, beautiful.
We've overcome our technical difficulties.
I think I think you made it. So, sounds like Tommy's got the console tonight. For some reason, I couldn't get logged in, but Tommy's operating everything, so he'll give you numbers to call if you want to call and all that stuff. How you doing, my brother?
Good. Hey, I didn't know whether you caught the beginning of the show, but we have a new sponsor.
I heard it kind of halfway through. Was it Unimac?
Unimac is the new sponsor for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Bobby Halton did a nice intro, and here we are.
All right, Unimac it is. You know, we're good. We're good. Thank you, Unimac, for sponsoring our shows, and not just our show, but the Blog Talk Radio series. As for some of you who don't know, if you're tuning in for the first time, there's a show 5 nights a week. There's about 20 or 25 different hosts, sets of hosts, and everybody from A to Z, people you read in Fire Engineering Magazine and beyond. And Tommy and I are here once a month up on the back step talking about stuff, a lot of safety, survival, and other things, just like the announcer said on the intro. So basically here in New York, it's getting to be fall. The colors are coming out. It's kind of a 65 to 70 in the day, getting chilly at night. I leave the house 4:45 in the morning. I need a jacket. So here we are, you know, it's the time of the year. What's going on out west, Tom? How they doing with the fires? You know, it occurs to me that the wildfires out west were like, it was headline news for like a month, and now it's not even on the news anymore. What's going on out there, you know?
Things have kind of slowed up a little bit. The monsoonal rains, especially here in the great southwest, have slowed things down in the Four Corners area tremendously. California still having issues. Things have kind of eased up a little bit.
Yeah, like I said, it hasn't been on the news a lot, but that's I guess that's good news. But I guess California's still burning, no?
Yeah, still issues out there.
Yeah, you know what, Tommy, why don't you give out the call-in number? We'll get a brother from California, a sister from California to call in and give us a little update, because like I said, it's not headline news anymore, and I'm sure it's, you know, they still got somewhat of a chance, but why don't you let the number out? Maybe somebody can give us a call from the West Coast.
Okay. The number for calling in is 760-454-8852. That's 760-454-8852. That's the call-in number for the Backstep Boys.
You sound like one of them commercials. Okay. 760-454-8852. Act out, you get the three back in the club run.
Hey, you told me I had a face for radio.
Yes, both of us have faces for radio. That's why we're not on TV. This is, you got it. I got you. So, as most of
I got,
you know, Tommy.
Tom? Go ahead. I was just going to throw something out when you get done.
All right. Well, what I was going to say is, I know most of our listeners, they know that you and I heavily engaged with the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. And last weekend was the 40th anniversary of the memorial service, the National Memorial Weekend. And we honored line of duties from 2019 and 2020 because we couldn't do it last year because of COVID. And despite 6.5 tons of requirements and restrictions by the federal government, don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, we're on the federal reservation. The National Fire Academy is the National Emergency Training Center, actually, is where the monument is. So the National Fire Academy is there. The Emergency Management Institute is there. And it's federal property. So we jumped through thousands of hoops, but we planned the hell out of it, and we moved forward in the interest of our families to try to give them some closure. The weather was with us, boy. The good Lord was smiling on us last weekend. It was in the low 70s Saturday and Sunday. The Saturday night candlelight service at the monument was beautiful. We even caught a bit of a sunset as it commenced. And then Sunday, the service was just phenomenal. Our production crew, our ceremonial crew, that times everything out. That they're just working with the honor guard, the pipes and drums, the family escorts. I mean, and we've done some behind the scenes stuff, but we have 25 independent operating units. We have 25 committees that are doing their part to make that weekend a success. And my job as the IC is to keep everybody on the same song sheet. And Tommy's job as the operations chief is to carry it out. So we did a lot of planning. We had extra time because we didn't do one last year. So we worked on this one for about 18 months, and the proof was in the pudding. I spoke to families on Sunday during their final meal with us, their lunch before they headed home, and they were absolutely taken back, thrilled, and there's 500 other adjectives that I can name. So. And you know what, folks, we don't do this alone. Our honor guards, pipes and drums this year was somewhere around 500 or 600. I don't have the exact number. We have operations teams, people who just move stuff. They're just dragging shit all over the place. We had families in two different cities this year, Frederick, Maryland, and Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And we got bus transportation, and we got meals and registration. And, I mean, it just goes on and on. And just everybody really dug in hard, and it was a heavy lift. We knew it was going to be a heavy lift, but we pulled it off because we have, you know, that, I guess, with the honor guards, pipes and drums, and our operations teams and everybody else, yeah, we get about 700 or 800 volunteers to come out on the weekend and help us. So it's always rewarding. This year particularly is doing a double year. We do a memorial book for the weekend, and it was extra thick, of course, because we had 215 firefighters in 2019, 2020, and also we honor those who died in the line of duty. Perhaps the department or the family didn't understand the rules or the regs or the circumstances by which that firefighter had passed that it would qualify to be a recognized line of duty. So. We actually have a kind of at the memorial, for those of you who don't know, there's a separate stone that has the past years, and we add names to that, you know, 19, you know, whatever. It could have been the year 2004 or 2015, and then they realize, you know what, we think when Mike had his heart attack or whatever, it might fit the criteria. So the department or the family sends in a whole bunch of stuff, and then we say, you know what, yeah, and we'll put them on the wall retroactively. So. We do a bunch of those every year. And then you have there was a firefighter from West Haven, Connecticut, or North Haven, I forget which one of the havens it is. And he was in a horrendous crash, I think almost 20 years ago. And for 20 years, he's been disabled, crippled, all kinds of problems. And he finally succumbed to those injuries. That's a line of duty death, not unlike the firefighters in New York City who were dying of cancer 20 years after the Trade Center. It's considered line of duty as well. So we had a howling success of a weekend, a lot of challenges. I urge all of you, if you didn't see the ceremonies, you can go on firehero.org, www.firehero.org, and they're recorded, and you could sit and watch the ceremonies and take a look at how we honored our fallen over the weekend last week. And we're already planning for the next one. We have an AAR coming up with the command team, and we start planning the next one. The next one, just so you know, the foundation is moving the dates around. Right now, it's a moving target. It's always October. They want to move it to May. There's no dates. We got to move it to June, maybe April. We don't know yet. We have no idea. So, with the foundation staff is tackling the calendar at the moment to try to come up with a weekend, but they're looking to move it to spring versus fall. We just don't have any dates yet, so we'll keep you posted, and of course it'll be on the Fire News once it's solidified and announced. Tom, want to weigh in on the weekend a little bit?
You know, as always, it's a pretty emotional time, and you know, thankfully, you and I being hidden in the command post, kind of get out there post service to kind of see what's going on and making sure that areas of responsibility are running smoothly. The feedback from this year was good, really good. And I don't know if you saw the email that Victor Stagnaro sent out with a lot of the Facebook comments from families that showed up. And that, you know, the whole reason we're out there is for the families and to assist them getting through to this traumatic time. And I think we pulled that off and pulled it off quite well.
Yeah, and you know what? The biggest thing for us, Tommy, as you know, and most of us sit and agree at the command level, is for the fire hero families to get some closure. And a lot of times the things that Victor sent us were clips from Facebook postings. But what will happen inevitably is the foundation will get a batch of letters. And in those letters is when the families tell us, thank you, we're able to move on a little bit. We got a little bit of closure. That's really that's the touchdown here. Is so those families, and that was the sad part last year for us when we couldn't give our families closure. That's the tough part. A couple of us had those telephone conversations, said, God, it was that weekend. We're not in Emmitsburg. So we played a nice tribute video to the 2019 line of duties on the air, but that's all we could do. And afterwards, I had some telephone conversations with some of our staff, Tommy, and we all said the same thing. We couldn't give our families closure this year. That was the part that was eating us from the inside out. So when we have that opportunity to do that, that's the rewarding part of the weekend. And all the hard work and planning and loud discussions at times and all that stuff pays off. That's the moment that it pays off and say, you know what, this was okay, and we'll come back and do it again next year. We had some new people with us this year. They performed really, really well. I spoke to some of the ops teams, some of the team leaders, and they brought a couple of new people, and they'll be lined up to come back. You know what happens, Tommy. You know, they come one time, and they're in the middle of all of this, and then it's like, I got to come back and do this again. This was, again, yeah. It's rewarding. You know, it's the deep-rooted brotherhood and all that stuff. So pretty neat stuff. So I don't know if there's any other highlights to bring out from the weekend, but what's neat about the weekend also a little bit is that the people who come to help, whether it's Honor Guard pipes and drums, our operations and logistical teams that move stuff, that, you know, move the campus nine times and you know, all those, everybody who comes back every year, it's the A team. You know, I kind of brag. You know, I tell people ask me about the Memorial Weekend. I said, I got the A team. There's no knuckleheads. And when a knucklehead comes out, you know, pops out of the closet, so to speak, we don't invite him back. You know, it's just that simple. It's like, you know, we don't have time for this. We don't want to deal with it. We're super focused. We're keenly focused on the families. We're not dealing with baloney. This isn't the firehouse, and it's not anything remote. It's all about what we're there for. So it's never about us. You know, over the years there were missed meals, and we were thrown off the campus in 2013 because the government shut down. It didn't stop us. we got the A team. We'll do it. We'll figure out a way to do it. You know, and so I that's not the best part. It's just that, you know, nobody says I can't. Nobody says I won't. And a few times somebody said, I'm not sure I can do that. Well, thank you for your service. You know, we appreciate it, and we won't need you next year. And that's it. And then we move on and we find somebody else because the list is long. The waiting list is very, very long, to tell you the truth. So that's all I got on the weekend, Tom. You got anything you want to add?
You know, there are two things that popped up while I was doing a little research today. The first was a message I got from our friend Ken Farmer at the National Fire Academy. And I didn't realize it till Ken had sent me the message. But our home away from home, the Odd House Pub, is celebrating their 50th anniversary.
Oh, no kidding.
Wanted to send a... Go ahead.
No, you go. Go ahead.
I just wanted to send out my kudos to Bobby and Susie and the entire Ott family who have treated me so well over the last 26, 27 years that I've been going to the Academy. These people are the salt of the earth. I mean, they're so down to earth and have been nothing but my friends for many, many, many years now. And I wish them all the best and for their last 50 years and all the best for the next 50 years.
Yeah, well said, Tom. And you know what? You're right. They are just salt of the earth people. They work hard, that's for sure. Listen. That's a tough business to be in, you know, a bar, tavern, restaurant. That's a tough business to start with. And then they're around firemen all the time. Shit, it's a double whammy on those people. You know? So like, they're putting up with the likes of us, you know. And I guess I've done about 25 years there myself. We're done without booze, you know. And when I'm early, in the early days, it was with booze. Today, it's not necessarily with booze, but. At the end of the day, they support they support the Academy. The guys that come there, they're generous. I've had talks with Bobby, and when things are quiet, and we talk about the Memorial Weekend, and he's got my cell number, and he knows where we're at. And I said, Bobby, if things get ornery in here, especially with staff with the Memorial Weekend, I said, you call me 3 o'clock in the morning, whatever, 2 o'clock. I said, Tommy and I'll come here. We'll take care of that problem. Don't worry. All the years, he's called me one time, and he said to me, I think you need to get over here. He says, I got a couple of guys that are acting a little ornery. And we went over there, and, you know, of course, the guys got some beer muscles, and, you know, they wanted to fight with somebody. And it was just stupid, nonsensical bullshit. And we took the guys outside, and we had a chat with them, and we said, you know, your evening at the Odd House has just ended. We hope you said goodnight.
Thanks for playing.
Yeah, we help you pay your tab, but it's time to go back to your hotel or whatever and go to sleep, and then you know, come back like a normal person tomorrow. So, you know, the nice people. The interesting part for a lot of people who don't know, they were closing up. They were closing up right around 1979, 1980, because it's a small sleepy town. They just couldn't make a go of it. And then they opened up the National Fire Academy there in Emmitsburg, and that saved the day. And they never forgot that. They never forgot that. That saved the day. Well, Bobby was, you know, to go back to that far away, we're talking, you know, 40 years ago, right? Talking 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a grandpa now, probably around 65. So he was 25. He was a young guy helping out his dad.
Yeah.
And that was going to be his future. And then the fire service made his family whole. Like I said, he didn't get it for free. Those people, they're working 7 days a week. You know, his kids worked there. His daughters worked there. We saw his kids when they were small. His daughters, they were little kids when we started there. They grew up. They got married.
Oh, yeah. Kids.
Yeah, we saw the whole family kind of flourish, you know. And so, and I think in our early days, Tommy, you and I paid for the first two kids' college education, I'm thinking.
I'm thoroughly convinced of that.
Yeah. Just bar tab alone, but I didn't know. I didn't know it was 50 years for the Odd House. That's an interesting tidbit. But yeah, good luck to them. They've been good to us. They've been good to the fire service, and they're good people. They're just hardworking, kick ass folks. So pretty neat. Pretty neat stuff. Pretty neat to hear that.
The other thing I need to point out and give kudos to is to our other good friend, Deputy Chief Billy Goldfeder, on receiving the Mason Lankford Fire Service Leadership Award this year. That's a huge deal. That's like getting the MVP of the World Series.
Yeah, yeah. I picked that up on over the weekend. Picked it up on the Fire Press. I think I saw it. I heard something during Memorial Weekend last week. Somebody said, "Oh, Goldfeder got another award." You know, but they didn't say what it was, who gave it to him. And I said, "Oh, I said it's just to go. It'll go with his collection because you know he's the Energizer Bunny. You know, you can't stop the guy." But sure enough, it turned out over the weekend I was doing some surfing, and before you know it, they showed a picture of him, and it's the Mason Lankford Award from the Congressional Fire Services Institute, which is a pretty high honor. You know, they don't just throw them around to anybody. And you know, Billy, listen, Billy's been in the trench a long time, and he took on the mantra of firefighter health and safety a long time ago when he's out there at the forefront. And, you know, he's doing his thing. So good for him. I congratulations, Billy G. A lot of people, Tommy, don't know he was my original partner on this show, you know.
I know. I remember it
until
well.
Until that night you gave him a flat tire when he couldn't get to the studio, and then you jumped on the air and you took it over. For those of you who don't know, the first three or four back steps was myself and Billy Goldfeder, probably a good – how long are we on the air, 10 years? You and I?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, so it's probably, 10 and a half years ago. And then Billy had a batch of – because that was a time in his life when he was just – the phone was ringing off the hook and people wanted him to come and talk about safety and all that shit. So he said, listen, I just can't commit. So we had a couple of good shows, he and I. And then I called you and said, hey, you want to just sit in for like 1 month? And that was 10 years ago. It was like, you're gonna be doing this temporarily, Chief, just, for now.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, let me know when you're done with me.
Right. 10 years later, here we are. So it's all good. It's all good. Yeah, Billy deserves the shit he gets. He puts enough time in and all that stuff. So that's that. Tommy, when I look at some of the health and safety stuff that's online on different various websites, various fire service websites, we still got firefighters, brothers and sisters that are dying of COVID. You know, I don't know. Of course, we really never know if it happened on the job or not. You know, I'm on a website now, and I'm looking at certain headlines. Let me see. A veteran Maryland firefighter succumbs to COVID-19. Let me see. Kentucky firefighter dies. That was numerous heart attacks. So we get that one. We know about the veteran Indiana firefighter succumbs to COVID-19. South Carolina lieutenant dies of COVID complications.
I gotta tell you, Ron, August 16th was the last time we were on the air. And when I read the roll at the end of the show, there have been 37 deaths since August 16th, and 81% of them are COVID deaths.
That's what I'm saying. They have Kansas military assistant chief dies of COVID. Ohio fire chief dies of COVID complications. It's like every other one. Yeah, Florida firefighter dies of COVID. It's just every other one is still COVID. And what I'm not grasping is. There are certain factions of the fire service still out there that are out and out refusing to vaccinate. They don't want to get the vaccine, these guys. They're exposed to this shit all day on medical runs, and they're living in close quarters with each other. You don't know who's bringing it into the firehouse, and yet they resist, you know. I get it. It's personal and all that, but you know, we're like it or not, we are part and parcel to the healthcare industry, okay? because people are calling 911 and we're sending the paramedic engine, or we're sending the EMTs on a bus or whatever we're doing. And people are getting sick. And I'm not saying they're not protecting themselves, but this thing ain't over yet. It ain't over. And seeing these people, you know, die off from COVID-19, when in fact we live in the modern era when we have the medicine and we have the ability to protect ourselves, and yet they're not taking part. So it almost seems like it's just a waste of it's a waste of life to die that way. When, you know, listen, we get into a lot of circumstances and a lot of things that are unforeseen. And, we get trapped, and when the buildings collapse and truss construction, all the stuff that we talk about all the time. So some of those are unforeseen circumstances. Some of those are unforeseen circumstances, you know. That's the guy that got killed in Frederick County a month or two ago. You know, they got a fire in a McMansion. He takes three steps into the doorway, goes into the basement. The fire was downstairs. They had no idea the fire was under them, burned through the shitty OSB beams, and he's in the basement, and he's gone. So those are those unforeseen things, but certain things we see coming at us. It's like you're standing on the train tracks. It's like you got to hop off the tracks and let the train go by, you know? So, again, I know it's personal to everybody, whether or not they're going to take a shot or not, but when you start looking at it, and like you said, 80% of the line of duty since August in the country are COVID-related, you know, I'm not sure, you know, what the thought process is. And we could debate this all night, and guys can call in and say, you know, don't tell me to take the shot. I'm not telling anybody to take the shot. What I'm saying is, you know, we're in the profession where we're exposed more than others. It's like, you know, the nurses and everybody else that's in the middle of this whole damn thing. So I don't know when or where it ends, but I hate seeing this when you got pages and pages of line of duties, and it's all due to the COVID-19. And you know, it's not all cut and dry, but it's something very few things we control. Okay, we're in a business where we deal with out of control shit. We deal with stuff that's out of control all the time. The only thing we can't control, and I talk about it a lot, is training. The only thing that we can absolutely control is when we do training, even if it's live burn training, we can control it. We can have a certain amount of fire. It's a finite amount. We know it's not going to get to that point where it's going to trap guys. We have a safety line. We have a second line. We have a safety officer. All that stuff is in place. So training is like the most controlled thing we do. Other than that, all our other activities, we don't have any control over. You know, they call us to try to make order out of chaos. I mean, that's why they call us. So when we have control over something, we have to do the best we can, I think, to take control of it, frankly. The other thing that my heart went out this morning, today, there's an Illinois federal firefighter in Illinois. His death is ruled a suicide. Seems he took his own life. Jeff Peters. Was assigned to Naval Station Great Lakes, DOD firefighter, found dead in his car in Chicago on Saturday from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. We're making great strides in that category, so to speak, in that realm, in that genre of trying to take care of our own and give them everything we need. So I didn't know Jeff. Okay, there's a picture of him on one of the websites. He looked like just a regular. He looked like a regular guy, Tommy, like the thousands of firemen we ever met in our whole lives, and you don't know what's going on with somebody. But I think the thing here, the message here, is when you're near a firefighter, a man or a woman, okay, who's having problems, okay, put your arm around them, see if you can get them some help. There's a lot more stuff out there now than there ever was. So don't let a guy like Jeff Peters die in vain. He took his own life for whatever reason. Okay, we don't question the reason. But if in fact he was troubled and you're around people who are troubled, get them some help. Okay, any way you can, try to step in between what's bugging them and eating them alive and them doing something bad to themselves, and get them some assistance. And there's plenty of stuff out there now. So hopefully, you know, we can start to stem this tide. And I think we're doing a fairly good job. We're getting resources out there. It's not a stigma anymore. for a firefighter to stand up and say, you know what, I need a little bit of help here. You know, and I've told my story 1,000 times right after 9/11. You know, I formerly worked at the fire department. I was over in Jersey at the time when it happened. My head was screwed up my body, and I went for help. I went to a counselor and said, what am I supposed to do now? You know, so there's stuff out there, you know. So if you need help, get it. And if you know someone who needs it, help them get it. You know, I don't know what else to say about it. Tom?
Yeah, I think the mental health aspect of something that had kind of a negative stigma to it when I was coming up. You know, it was something we didn't talk about. And it was out there, but I don't think a lot of us were aware of the damage that was being done through either post-traumatic stress or so many other things that were going on out there. And I agree with you, Ron. We're doing a better job with it, but there's still a lot more to be done. You know, and it's trying to get past the feeling that, you know, you've alienated yourself, and you haven't. If you've got a problem, you go to one of the brothers and you just say, hey, I need some help, and you know that's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. It's like I said, anybody out there who needs it can get it. It's available. It's available, and it doesn't. It's no longer a black mark. Okay, so it's out there. If you need it, get it. You know, I don't want to keep popping on it, but there's things we can do that we never used to be able to do. I saw Tommy recently. I can't find where it happened, but we lost a firefighter very recently in the last couple of weeks. A woman was traveling on a highway. There was an accident scene. Our people were on the scene, and she came up on the accident fast. She lost control of the car, and instead of bouncing off the blocking rig, you know, to get out from the right lane into the center lane, hopefully she would have hit the rig and bounced. She went to the right of it, into the shoulder, into the grass, and she ran into a bunch of our people and killed one of them. This takes me back to a couple of years ago, where a car did the same thing. It went inside. It went on the infield, so to speak, and it mowed into a couple of our people, killed one and maimed another. And we started talking about, well, blocking the road isn't enough. You got to block the shoulder too, because if you're operating in the shoulder, people are going to find a way around that apparatus and get in there. This is like the same exact thing that happened a couple of years ago that took one of our people. Turns out,
I believe that I think that was one of the Marion Township incidents, and I can't remember whether it was upper or lower Marion Township. It was the department next to Dennis Rubin. But
about the one a few years ago?
No, this is the one you're talking about where the woman smacked him. She just got charged with homicide over that entire incident, aside from being...
Here's the interesting part, Tommy, because the cops grabbed her and they gave her all kinds of tests for drugs and alcohol. Nothing in her system. The reason why they charged her with initially you know, manslaughter, and now if I don't know if it turned to homicide at this point, but they impounded her car, and three of her four brakes were rusted or hanging. She had no brakes in the car.
No.
So they charged her with operating a dangerous motor vehicle, leading to the accident, which led to the taking of her life. So they locked her up. She's not from there. She's from either New York or New Jersey. She's from like where my
neck
of the
woods.
Yeah, and she's locked up down here in Pennsylvania because they're holding her on like, you know, whatever it is, $500,000 bail. But they charged her because they checked her because once she had no substances and they couldn't figure out that she passed out, she said no. Then she said, I couldn't stop the car. So they brought it to their impound lot, and they had their experts, their forensic people, look at it, and they got under there and like there were no brakes. And they, so they charged it with that's, you know, that kind of led, one thing led to the other, you know, improperly maintained vehicle led to this, led to that, led to the next thing. But that, be that as it may, the lesson learned here is when you're on a limited access highway and you got the lanes blocked, if you're in the right lane or the left lane and there is shoulder, you've got to block the shoulder, if, especially if you're operating in the shoulder. This happened to us now twice in the last, I don't know, 10 years. Okay, now while that doesn't sound like a lot, okay, tell those two families or those two firefighters, well, it's only twice in 10 years. That's bullshit. You've got to protect yourself. The best thing I ever heard about highway and blocking, and I don't know who said it, okay, is you got to set up on the highway as if they're trying to kill you. Set up like they're going for you. Protect yourself like they're trying to kill you. And there's tons of stuff. What's the name of the outfit, Tommy? They got the guys that are FDIC every year, and they got websites and stuff. Well, Responder Safety?
Yeah. It's, Responder Safety. Steve Austin and Harry Carter, Jack Sullivan.
And Jack Sullivan, right. And they got, folks, they got tons of shit for free. Tons. They got, like, how to lay it out, blueprints, how to set up the block. You got to do it. And if they don't have anything on blocking that inside or outside shoulder, start doing it. And don't do it with a cop car. Somebody moving at 70 miles an hour on a major highway, 75, they're going to hit that cop car and push that into your scene, and you're going to end up dead anyway. So it's got to be a rig, an apparatus, a dump truck. That's the latest now. Chiefs are getting smart. They're picking up old, used dump trucks. Paint them red. Put a lot of yellow lights on them and use them as the blocking tool. And if they get hit, who cares? You don't have apparatus out of service. The smartest thing I've ever seen, the first time I saw it was about 15 years ago. Some chief in the Midwest did it. I said, that's ingenious. He bought a used dump truck at a DPW yard for $500. And he painted it, and he put yellow lights on it. And I think he even called it LSU-1, Life Safety Unit 1. And they take it out to the highway, and they block the lanes with the dump truck. Chances are you're going to bounce off that no matter who you are, but you got to protect your scene. You've got to protect your scene, including the inside and outside shoulder, because it happened again. It happened again. We just lost another one of our own. So don't let these people that, you know, the brothers and sisters who die like that, don't let them die in vain. Learn that lesson. Learn that lesson. You know, if it's, you're out there in the middle of the night, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, people are sleepy, people are under the influence, people don't have any brakes for some reason with this woman. And before you know it, you know, you rather hear that big boom, and I ran into the back of a dump, of an old beat-up dump truck, and then all of a sudden, here we are again, and we're at the monument in Emmitsburg, you know. So do whatever it takes to protect your scene, whatever it takes. Right after that last one that happened, Tommy, I was on the way home from Emmitsburg. I don't know if it was Memorial Weekend or whatever, but I'm on the way home, and there's an accident on 78 in Pennsylvania in my direction. So everything slows down. They have an engine in the left lane blocking. The accident is in front of the engine. The guys are working on the car. Inside, grassy knoll is wide open. So I pulled up in front, and I walked back, and I spoke to the guy driving the engine, and I said to him, listen, I'm a chief from New Jersey. I was still in Jersey time. I'm a chief from New Jersey. I said, there was just an accident recently. The guy came up the grass and he ran into the accident scene. Get another rig here. Do yourself a favor. Get another rig here. Block the grass. You got to block it. Even for now, just put a Suburban there. Do something. And he said, yeah, okay, yeah, I hadn't heard about that, but I'll tell somebody, you know. Now, whether he did it or not, I don't know. But And that's part of what we talk about, Tom, all the time. It's like if you see something, say something. You know, you got to step up. Sometimes they're not thinking about it. This is what I was taught. Just block the lane of traffic and I'm good. But things are always changing. You know, we're really in a dynamic and fluid situation on the fire ground. And we, you know, sometimes you just got to do whatever it takes. Do whatever it takes. But set up like they're trying to kill you.
I think that was the one of the commissioners from Chicago PD. I think I saw that same interview. and they basically reiterated that, yeah, you got to operate on the highway like they're trying to run you over. Because the sad part is they are. People drive like shit. And how can you miss not seeing a fire engine? I mean, that just blows my mind. But, you know, having the rig in position and turn properly, so it's going to take the hit instead of our people taking the hit. Hey, I saw something that kind of really bugged me. And it goes back to the New York State Fire Academy up in Montour Falls. And, of course, we knew about the death of the Watertown recruit, Peyton Morse, at the academy during Hell Week. Apparently, they had finally put another recruit class through and were doing Hell Week again and wound up with another injured firefighter. I don't know what's going on up there, but, you know, me being the professional skeptic that I tend to be, I hope somebody's looking into it. I saw that Morse's death is now being investigated by the State Police Violent Crime Unit, which I think is a great direction, especially if there's something going on either with the curriculum or whether they've got particular instructors that something may be going on there. But, again, it kind of bugged me that, you know, the first class that they've got back at that facility and they wind up with another injury during Hell Week.
Yeah, what is Hell Week simply, is it just like, you know, they're fighting fires and, you know, like it's like 20-hour days kind of thing? Is like that last place?
It sounds like a lot of repetition with some of the basic skills, ladders, putting on SCBAs, the basics. And, you know, unfortunately, it's got the misnomer of Hell Week attached to it. You know, somebody's looking into this, and I'd like to think in my heart of hearts that if there's something going on, it's going to get fixed. But if you get a line of duty death during training, that's something that really, really needs to be looked at. As you said at the beginning of the show, that's probably our most controlled environment. And when an incident occurs where there's an injury or death, and sometimes that happens, we got to go in and do a little failure analysis to see how did this happen. There's got to be some contributing factor there to have something so devastating occur during that controlled environment that it really, really, really needs to be looked at.
Yeah, and you know, Tom, that along with an AAR, you know, we talk about after action reports and we talk about tailboard talks and all that stuff, and we have something on the Fire Hero Learning Network. For those of you who haven't seen it, the FHLN, the Fire Hero Learning Network, is a product of the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. A lot of people aren't aware of the really great training programs we have on there, and it's all free. We got about a dozen short videos, maybe 30, 45 minutes. There's one on there. It's almost all military. And they talk about how they do an AAR, and they say it's not to blame. It's not about blame. We're not blaming anybody. And every time they have an operation, they do an AAR, no matter who they are. Even like the Blue Angels. You know, the guys with the jets, you know, their wingtips are 6 inches apart and you know, all that stuff. And who's the other gang with the jets? They got the Blue Angels and then they got there's two of them. There's one Navy, I think, and one is Air Force. But after every exercise or whether it's training or they go out and do a show, they sit in the AAR and they say, hey, Tom, You were a little too close to me, man. You took your eye off the ball. Or you weren't high. We were all flying at 8,022 feet. You were flying at 8,023. And it's not about blame. It's not about any of that. It's about excellence at the very end of the day. And we need to do that. You know, I've been around a couple of different fire departments, as you know. And at one particular department, you know, everybody got highly insulted after a fire when I called out particularly the driver pump operator. It turns out he was trying to pump too many lines. You know, you can only get so much water out of a rock. You know, so there we are. We got a $500,000 rock sitting there. And he was trying to pump too many lines. He got caught up in the moment. So it happens. But when I talked about it, they got highly insulted. I said, wait a minute. This isn't about pointing the finger and saying, you screwed up. This is saying, your training let you down. You lost your head. You forgot. You whatever. Whatever it is. But it's not about saying, you screwed it up and we burned the house down. It's about how do we improve this next time? You have to know what your limitations are. Go back and study the pump. Everybody study the pump. Know what you can get out of that pumper. You know, sometimes you get a little more out of a pumper. You know, you can finesse it. But they got insulted, you know. So I wrote up for like a department bulletin, and they came to me and said, oh, you know, you're blaming this guy for this. I'm not blaming anybody. And I urge everybody listening to this who's been a part of that, if you want to have a good, meaningful AAR where you can look at things and get better, okay, go to the Fire Hero on Wentworth, get on there and find that AAR video. And I'm trying to think who the military guy is that's on it. He's a general. I think he's a 3-star. And he did it for us. This is a National Fallen Firefighters video. But he explained very clearly what they do and why they do it and how to do it. And so, you know, all of that comes back to being better at what we do because we're in that ever-changing environment and things are happening and there's more shit coming down the pike. And we never know where the next foot's going to drop, you know, Tom.
Oh, yeah. The ability to do that, and I've seen it done a couple different ways. In a formal setting with everybody kind of sitting around. But I think the more effective, at least in my feeble mind, is doing the quick backstep AAR right after you get done with the operation. Everything is kind of fresh in your mind. And, you know, we can celebrate our successes and take a look and see what the failure points were and discuss that to make sure they don't happen again.
Yeah, and the thing is, but everyone, I agree with you because it's fresh, you know, and it's sitting around right after the job and say, hey, what went wrong, what went right, you know, let's make a couple of notes here, and then we adjust our training. And it's what you got. If you don't take the stuff that went wrong and adjust your training, then you're not going to fix anything because if something went wrong, it's a bad behavior or an incorrect behavior, we'll call it, and you want to fix that. You know, so yeah, I agree with you to take a few minutes, you know, and just, hey, how'd we do tonight? You know, we had trouble getting the second line in place, so we couldn't get a ladder up on an angled garden or something. So, all right, how do we fix that? You know, what do we got to look at? So I agree. But that's only going to get us better at what we do. You know, we have this ever-changing environment, and it's rapid. It's rapid. It's coming down the pike fast, I got to tell you. What else, buddy?
Yeah, I actually ran into something else the other day, and I hadn't been keeping up with it. But after I started doing a little research on the subject of cancer-causing chemicals in our personal protective equipment, have you seen any of the stuff that's been floating around on this subject?
Extensively, yes.
The PFAS chemicals that they're talking about, and I didn't know much about PFAS chemicals, and I could try to pronounce that, but I'm not going to. But apparently there's more than 6,000 of these chemicals floating around, and what's in question is the moisture barrier of our turnout coats. And by the NFPA standard, I guess they've got to withstand 40 hours of continue assault by UV lighting. And the only material that they could find that actually is able to pass that test contains textiles that have these PFAS chemicals in them. I'm not a scientist by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm questioning. And apparently, they tried getting the TIA in through the NFPA standard, which, for whatever reason, I'm not sure what the exact problem was. It didn't pass. So, you know, the moisture barriers that are being used right now are not going to disappear anytime soon. But, I mean, if we got even the potential of cancer-causing chemicals in the stuff we're wearing, to me, that kind of, it's setting off alarm bells. And hopefully somebody smarter than I am is looking at this stuff and trying to figure out what direction we're going to go with it.
Yeah, there's, from what I understand, is there's a whole bunch of research going on right now, a whole bunch of research. And it started out with the discovered PFOAs, but it turns out PFOAs are everywhere. I mean, it's particularly with potency, you know, in some of the foams and turnout gear and that kind of stuff. You know, I made a couple of inquiries. As you know, Tommy, I'm a prostate cancer survivor. So, you know, something popped up, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago about PFOAs and foam. You know, I was an industrial chief for 20 years. You know, we used an awful lot of foam in training and a couple of jobs and here and there. So, you know, I made my inquiry and said, here I am. I've been around it for 20 years. I've been around foam for 20 years or more, you know, to a lesser degree in municipal departments, but a lot of it, you know, during my time in an industrial setting. And then, you know, the class action suit and all this other stuff. And then I got a letter from the attorneys. They said we decided we're going to drop the case. We have no basis. So that didn't pan out, you know.
Yeah.
So it was all, you know, a big hype and a rush because PFOAs were in our turnout gear. And it almost started to make sense because the PFOAs were in turnout gear. The groin area is the most apt for absorption at 300 to 1, 300 times more than anywhere else in the body is the groin. And testicular and prostate cancer are the top cancers in firefighters, so in male firefighters. So it's like, this makes sense. You know, you do all your sweating, and you know, that's where your pores open up, and then you absorb. And if the PFOAs are in the gear itself, that's the first stuff to get to you. But turns out, through their extensive research, through science, that particular law firm said, you know what, nah, this looks like a loser. We're not going that way. So they dropped it. Now, there's something else, but there was still a ton of research going on with PFOAs, PFASs, and to see if in fact, it has an impact. So yeah, the alarm bell's ringing, and people are working on it, but it's going to take a while to figure it out, frankly. Yeah, that's no good on a radio show, you know. You got anything else, buddy?
Yeah, there were a couple of things. And I had talked to you, or I texted you the other night. As you know, I'm a big reader, and much the same way you are. And I think I turned you on to the Wayne Miller's book, Burn Boston Burn.
That was an incredible book. Shit.
Oh, he's got a new book out. The title, which I thought was kind of cute, since he's an ATF guy, the title of the book is Bang, Boom, Burn. And it takes a look at a number of different arson, gun, and explosive cases that he investigated during his time with the ATF. And again, another pretty fascinating read. But while I was reading his book, it mentioned a book that I had never heard of before on the Wooster Cold Storage Warehouse fire called 3,000 Degrees, the true story of a deadly fire and the men who fought it. And that's written by a guy named Sean Flynn. And I had never heard of it. And I figured if anybody had heard of it, it would have been my fellow book aficionado, Ron Canterman. And you told me you hadn't heard of it.
It's funny because we had a fire in a house when I worked in Wilton. And one of the guys actually pulled a copy of that from the basement. The place was burned up pretty good. It was a hoarder house to boot. And he kind of, I remember him picking it up, and he says, look at this book I found in the middle of all this mayhem and crap. And it said 3,000 degrees on it. But I didn't give it, as we talked about it, I thought about it and said, it sounded familiar. So actually, I saw a copy one time in a flash, but that was about it. That was about it. But I didn't know anything about the book. I didn't pursue what it was about. So that's the 3,000 degrees is the Worcester fire.
Yeah. So I ordered it on my Kindle the other day, but I'm almost finished up with another one I'm reading, and I'll get into it. I'm a little skeptical about non-fire service people writing some of this stuff, but the book you turned me on to called Killer Show on the Rhode Island fire was written by an attorney, and that was a fascinating read on that that particular.
Absolutely well done. John Barrowick did a hell of a job. The research involved, everything. And I read it, interestingly enough about Killer Show is, we all know how the story ended, but I couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
And I read it in 2 nights, just really well done. What was the author's name on the Bang Boom Burn book and the one on 3,000 degrees again, Tommy? Let's give that out one more time.
3,000 degrees, the true story of a deadly fire and the men who fought it is written by Sean Flynn. Sean's a magazine article author, which used to impress me until I became one. And but apparently the book is based on an article he did in Esquire magazine. Wayne Miller has two books out. Burn Boston Burn is based on a serial arson case that he investigated as an ATF agent that involved firefighters and police officers. That's a fascinating read. And the new book he's got out is Bang Boom Burn. And again, it takes a close look at some of the cases that he investigated with his time with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives.
You turned me on to that Burn Boston Burn book. And I had never heard of that case. And if you guys are, if you're out there and you're interested even a little in the arson cases that in history of the United States, read Burn Boston Burn. You have to read this book. It was absolutely incredible. Whether you're a firefighter, an officer, or even a student, a lot of students go to different colleges, and if they major in fire and arson investigation, you got to read that book. It'll flip you inside out. That's another book. I killed it in 3 days. I just couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, it looks like our time's about up. Do you have a roll call for tonight?
I do.
Is it long? You said how many do we have?
We've got 37 line of duty deaths. So let me go with Tommy Hobson on 8/15 from Carrollton, Georgia, a COVID line of duty. Joshua Schwint, 8/15 from Elkhart, Kansas, who was electrocuted by a power line at a motor vehicle collision. William Stalls on 8/15 from Oak City, North Carolina, a COVID death. Timothy Watson on 8/15 from Windsor, Georgia, a COVID death. Willie Bunch, 8/16 from Oak City, North Carolina, a COVID death. Dylan Roderick, 8/16, from Austin, Texas, an unknown medical at the station. Mario Moya, 8/17, from Jacksonville, Texas, COVID death. Corey Collins, 821, from Pine Bluff, Arkansas, a COVID death. Hermencio Carapia, 823, from Center Point, Oregon, struck by a falling tree at a wildland fire. Judy Spencer on 824, Gasport, New York. She was struck by an apparatus while trying to back the unit up. Cody Traber, 826, from Meade, Washington, fell from a bridge while investigating a wildland fire. Donald Trout, 827, from Sayreville, New Jersey, unknown medical while responding. James Krause, 828, from Colfax, Washington, had a heart attack at the scene. Mark Colville, 830, from Burkaw, North Carolina, a COVID death. Malcolm Arrington, 91, Nashville, Tennessee, a COVID death. Marshall Hilly, 91, Gulfport, Mississippi, a COVID death. John Gaddy, 92, Forest Park, Georgia, a COVID death. J.B. Goulier, 92, from Franklin, Georgia, had a heart attack at the station. David Leos, a 92, from Dallas, Texas, a COVID death. James Heater, 93, from Vidner, Texas, a COVID death. LaRon Holcomb, 94, from Ellsworth, Pennsylvania, had a heart attack after a call. Randy Burnham, 95, from Lake City, Florida, a COVID death. Michael Angulo, 96, from Phoenix, Arizona, a COVID death. Joshua McGill, 99, from Coleraine, North Carolina, a COVID death. Jeffrey Hager, 910, from Huntersville, North Carolina, a COVID death. John Del Valle, 914, from Garden Valley, Idaho, a COVID death. Carl Kleinman, 915, from South Point, Ohio, a COVID death. Robert LaCuse, 917, from Alice, Texas, a COVID death. Scott Cassells, 918, from North Little Rock, Arkansas, a COVID death. Frank Duff Jr., 919, Columbus, Ohio, a COVID death. Jeffrey Billingsley, 920, from Denver, Colorado, suffered a heart attack at the station. Joey Wright, 924, from Shepherdsville, Kentucky, had a heart attack after a training exercise. David Hackett, on 925, from Brooksville, Florida, a COVID death. Randy Miner, 926, from Newark, Ohio, a COVID death. Kelly Fry, 929, Cumberland, Maryland, a COVID death. Mark Gillum, 10-3, from Elwood, Illinois, a COVID death. And Andrew Orphan Odasky, on 10-3, from Hardeesville, South Carolina, a COVID death. Again, as we say every month, please keep the brothers and sisters in your thoughts and prayers for them as well as their families.
Thanks, Tom. I'm not going to wrap up the show as we normally do. That was too long of a roll call tonight, and it puts us all in a perspective of what's going on out there. So take care of yourselves, everybody. Stay well. Be well. We'll see you again.
All right. Stay safe, everybody. Take care.